Hey everyone, and welcome to Dead Men Don't Podcast. Let's start that again because Adara started laughing.
Totally ready. Okay. Totally ready. It's fine. No, just power through it. It's fine. We're here. We're in it. Okay. It's us.
Okay, so this episode is going to be kind of a mixture of true crime and then our normal supernatural kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Adara has a lot of interesting stuff to tell us, so...
I'm pumped!
What are we doing it on today, Adara? What's our place?
Our place is Don Jail.
Yes.
Yes.
The Don Jail in Toronto.
And it's so, like, I'm so excited. This was your idea.
Yeah.
Because you discovered that we could just, like, go in and do mm-hmm. self-guided tours.
Yeah.
To which my response was, are we sure?
Yeah.
Are we sure we could do that?
Yeah.
We weren't sure until we got in there and saw pamphlets and we're like, ah, yes.
Yeah, because it's getting changed into an admin building for a hospital.
Well, it's already an admin building.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's, like, I touch on it very briefly, but it's literally just, like, the administrative offices on the third and fourth floors, and then some of them are on the lower floors, but you can still go in and explore the lower level, the main floor, and the first floor.
Which we did, and we're going to tell you about
it. Except for the first floor. Or the second floor, technically.
Yeah. We went in the basement and, like, the main floor, but we couldn't go upstairs, so we went down there, and you guys will hear some of the stuff we had down there.
Yeah, it was... Oh, we'll get into that, too. Like,
we'll get into it a little later.
Yeah.
So let's get into the history.
Yeah, No, I'm super pumped about this, because you're staring at my pile of paper right now trepidation.
She printed it out. She printed it out, and it's also in blue ink because she has no more black ink.
Yeah, listen, so... I'm broke, and I can't afford printer ink. It is cheaper to buy a whole new printer than it is to buy printer ink.
I bet. My printer was, like, $25.
Yeah, so was mine.
Yeah. How much was the ink?
It came with the printer.
Yeah, it came with the printer. Oh, my God, we have the same printer.
Oh, my God.
Let's get into the story.
Okay. Okay, so, yeah. Like I said, I was thrilled when we were doing a jail because it crosses over with my true crime obsession. So I'm like, I hope we get some real good, like, criminals in this story.
Oh, we do.
Spoiler alert. There's a ton. There are so many really good criminals. So before we get into the hauntings, which you're going to start on at the end, we got to go through the history and all the fun shit. Not that the hauntings aren't fun.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, so before we get into it, I just want to say at the top that this information has been pulled together from, like, a hodgepodge of news articles and publications, like The Star, The Globe, The Torontoist, Inside Toronto, etc., archaeological reports, plaques at the jail itself, pieces of books, and a movie. So I'm not going to list everything in the show notes because it would take too much space. When we eventually get a website, I'll put, like, the... I think there's 20 or so individual sources that I use for this. Like, I've got a record of it.
We'll do a couple of them.
If you want to learn more, if you want to read into it yourself, just do a Google search and it all comes up. So yeah, Don Jail completed construction in 1864. So, like, this bitch is old. Mm-hmm. Not as old as previous homes that we've talked about. But this is the first episode that we're doing that doesn't have an individual at the center of the story.
Right, yeah. No, we're not focusing on one ghost this time, guys.
No, there's multiple.
Yeah.
There's multiple. And you're gonna learn why real fast here. But it began construction in 1858 after being designed by an architect named William Thomas in 52. So it was kind of in the process of being made for quite a while. But Thomas died before the construction was actually completed. He was, like, early 60s or something like that. So he never got to see the end result of his work, but it was a long and painstaking process for him and the construction crew. And there are some sources that seem to claim that the troubles he had with the design and the construction and all of that, and then ultimately passing before its completion, kind of aided to the potential curse-like atmosphere of the building.
Okay.
Like, it was, like, dead on its feet kind of thing.
Was it meant to be a jail initially?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So he designed it as a jail, and he was a popular architect of the time, so he built a number of gorgeous churches and cathedrals throughout the 1800s all through Canada. He was one of the early popular architects. He probably knew our friend.
John Howard.
Yeah. So he built, like, the St. Paul's and St. Michael's cathedrals here in Toronto and stuff like that. So, like, all these Gothic revival Renaissance Revival style architecture that's like tall, imposing buildings with elaborate decorative patterns, lancet windows, etc. Basically, just if you picture an ornamental Catholic church style,
yeah,
that's kind of what
it's a fancy jail, guys. It looks fancy.
It is. It is. Yeah,
and gargoyles and everything.
There's when you walk up to the jail, like the front, like the south entrance,
yeah,
the main entrance. Did you notice like the face at the top? That's Father Time. So he was carved in above the door as like an intimidating figure for anybody who was being brought into the jail from the front door.
Okay.
It's like Father Time, you know, you're going to
spend... But then I'm thinking, like, did they know who that was? Because it's like criminals are going criminals in there. They're like, that's Father Time. I just murdered two people. But I definitely recognize this guy.
I think even if they don't know that it's Father Time specifically, the face is relatively creepy. Yeah, it's got a weird gargoyle-y type vibe to it. And any door that has a gargoyle face at the head of it is going to be intimidating when you walk through anyway. And inside the building is still kind of in that Renaissance revival style. And there's like architectural design quirks like that. I can't remember if it was or the half hexagon type main room, like you know how it was like
the gallery or whatever,
the gallery, which was like the lower level was the same shape in that, but then it was just ceiling
above
it. So it's tall and everything just kind of goes in a circle around the main floor. So our friend William Thomas there, now this may be no fault of his. And I've read the stories, and it's not really a design flaw in the architecture, but, I mean, I'm not an architect, but you'd think if you designed a jail, you'd make it so that people can't escape.
Yeah.
But there were a number of escape attempts and successful escapes at that jail.
There was a lot of windows, guys.
There are...
Like, wide windows, too. Yeah. Easily fit, you could put two people through.
Yeah. The jail itself is located in Toronto's Riverdale neighborhood. It's east of the Don River on Girard Street. So if you're in Toronto or you're visiting and you can actually go to the jail and do a self-guided tour, it's easily accessible by bus. So in 2013, the building was converted into office space for the Bridgepoint Health Institute. So you can't access the third or fourth floors of the jail unless you're on a schedule guided tour.
Yeah.
You can't get to the second floor if there's a film shoot coming up, which is why we couldn't get to the second floor. So we don't have any photos or anything from the second floor, which is where the gallows and everything was, because the security that was there it wasn't normal security, it was security for the film shoot.
Yeah.
And they weren't letting us up to that floor. Originally, with the architectural plans that Thomas gave, and the philosophy of a new type of reform system in Canada, they promoted a more progressive approach to the wellness and conditions of jailed men and women. So the Don Jail was originally prided as a, quote, palace for prisoners. And it was supposed to be this, massively comfortable space for these prisoners to stay and be reformed and then be released back out into society if their trials don't say otherwise, kind of thing. So the cells were meant to only be occupied during sleeping hours, as the jail operated on the mandate that exercise, busy work, and socialization may help to better reform their prisoners. So they would, go out and they would work the yards or work on, I think there was a farm nearby, so they would do, labor and stuff, and that would help kind of keep them active and their minds off of whatever. And you have to keep in mind that this wasn't, a prison. People weren't supposed to come here and stay for life. It was a jail for remanded offenders, which means it's a place where charged offenders were to be held until their trials, and then either the punishment would be taken out, they would be set free, or they would be moved to a permanent prison.
Yeah.
Regardless, the palace for prisoners didn't remain so bright and shiny for very long. The reputation of the jail quickly began to sour as the living conditions hastily began to deteriorate, leading up to its official closure of the original building in 1977. Eventually, the prisoners were let out of their cells on rarer and rarer occasions, as the jail itself not only hit capacity, but overshot it. Are you ready for these numbers?
Yeah.
No, you're not. The original construction of the building was built to house 276 prisoners. That's a fair amount of bodies. That was what the reform system was like. This is comfortably, we can accommodate this, and this is going to be a really nice, philosophical...
Yeah.
it's going to be
good. It's never like that, though.
At the end of its service, just before it was shut down, the, quote, rated capacity of the jail was 550 prisoners, and the prisoner load averaged out at around 620 at any given time. And remember, I'm just going to repeat the original number again, it was only supposed to house 276.
So, like, 2 to 3 people a room, then?
Yeah. They would have several men in one single occupancy cell. So you remember how small those cells were when we were
there's barely enough room for one person.
Yeah, like, you can, we're probably gonna have pictures of it up, but yeah, there's, like, less than a foot of space between the bed and the wall, and then maybe a foot of space between where the door would have been closed and the foot of the bed. Like, that's the only movement, and then there was the bed.
Yeah, that's it. Like, the bed is basically the room.
Exactly. But do you remember how high the ceilings were?
They were really high.
They were really high. Yeah. So what they did was hung hammocks.
Right.
So this single occupancy cell with barely any space to, like, stand now houses minimum of 3 men with one bucket to use between them for...
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's nightmarish.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine being that close proximity? Like, that cell was claustrophobic.
To, like, other people, too. Like, these are criminals that are in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And this became, like, a breeding ground for these criminals, and I mean, again, in this kind of time, there would definitely be some people there that were there for, like, petty crimes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Jean Valjean thing of, I stole a loaf of bread, kind yeah. of. Like, there were women held in here, too.
Yeah. So it was men and women together, guys.
Yeah. And now, I don't know if they would have been... They probably wouldn't have been held in the same...
No. It would have been in separate cells.
Separate cells and probably a separate block.
Yeah.
Too. But still.
Still, it's the same... Still, men and women in the same jail.
Yeah. Yeah. And the jail very quickly became a stinking, rotting, sweltering house of a lot of very angry, and in many cases very dangerous men and women who were being shoved into spaces that they weren't even supposed to fit half the number of people that were being shoved in there.
Yeah.
And since it was a short-term jail, like, it's meant only as a holding station before the trials, it wasn't equipped with the proper facilities to accommodate that many prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
There were no visitor facilities, the exercise area was too small, telephones and meeting rooms for lawyers were few and far between, the showers weren't big enough, and God only knows how they washed the clothes or fed the prisoners. And the average stay was 30 to 90 days, and many prisoners would stay there for much longer even than that. So, that many people in such close proximity with that deplorable conditions became a breeding ground not only for the heightened severity of emotions, like, these are criminals,
right,
for the most part, after all, but also a disgusting, shit-filled, rodent- and roach-infested cesspool for the development of plagues of diseases that swept through the prisoners, most notably tuberculosis. Like, these guys were sick on top of everything. And no amount of natural lighting is going to help that.
We got them big windows.
Unsurprisingly, because of all this, the jail itself went through many investigations and court trials of its own, as it was deemed unfit for living and in violation of several prisoner and court of laws rights at the time. As mentioned before, it was officially shut down in 1977, as the main portion of the jail was pivoted to the newer addition to the building, which was demolished when they turned it into a medical center. Kenzie, how did you feel when you were in solitary confinement when we were in there?
Okay, so I was on solitary confinement for about, like, 0.5 seconds. and it was shit. And people stayed in there for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was in there for 5 seconds. I would only go in there if Adara went in, and I said, I will go in there if you come in with me, Adara, and we'll close the door. How big do you think this is, Adara?
Okay, so this, I think, comfortably, you might be able to fit 3 people in here.
I don't like this.
The ceiling slants down, so you have more space on one side than you do on the other side. On the other side, there's only room to, like...
It's like Harry Potter's room.
It is, yeah. It's basically the cupboard under the stairs.
And, guys, literally, if we shut the door, I am not very brave, so I don't want to shut the door.
Do you want me to come in and shut the door? I'll do it.
You want to do it?
Yeah, I can do it.
I'll do it with you. I'll do it if you're in here, but I won't. Unless you want me to step out.
There is no handle on the inside.
Okay, we'll just close it slightly, but we're not going to close it all the way because we don't want to get locked in here, because that's literally my worst nightmare. No. I started seeing something in the corner. I'm not. But you could go in. You could go in.
Do,
I'm not
do
going.
You want me to?
You can if you want.
Okay, I'll do it.
Okay.
I'm gonna close it a little bit.
Okay. So it is 100% completely dark in here. And yeah, you're right, the air gets a lot thinner and the uneasy feeling grows as soon as all the light is cut off.
Wait, what happened? What happened?
It was just everything in there got heavier, and I don't know if it was just because of the absence of light.
No.
But it just, like, the air got thicker, and I started to
see things.
Like, my legs started to shake.
Yeah. I could just hear. The thing is that when Adara's speaking there, I couldn't even hear her.
Oh, that is a thick ass door.
Yeah, so I only heard you when you start coming towards the door and say, and then you start opening it.
See, this door is almost a full 2 inches thick, and it's solid oak.
Like, as soon as, like, I was stepped in there and she started coming in there and she started closing the door and the light started fading, I started panicking, like, immediately.
Well, my knees went weak. As soon as the light was cut off and I kind of turned away from, there's a little bit of space between the hinge and the top of the wall. So there was, like, a tiny, tiny bit of light that was coming in, but not enough to actually see by. So when I was facing the end of the cell that, like, where it slopes down, it kind of looks like it just kind of went on forever. It was completely nothing.
Since capital punishment was enacted in 1859, the year after the Don Jail began construction, the jail itself inevitably became the site of indoor hangings. And when we first entered the jail, the first person we saw was a security guard that came up to us and was like, "Oh, you guys gonna take a look around?"
16 people were put to death.
Yes.
And then the last two, I was 6 months old, 1962.
Wow.
One, he killed a policeman, but it was for self-defense. The other one was a drug dealer, and he had a boyfriend, girlfriend were gonna testify against him, so he murdered them. But both their trials were put through so quickly that the citizens said, "Why did you have to kill them? You could have just put them in jail."
Right.
So they were the last two, 1962.
Wow.
Yeah. But it opened in 64, and there were 16 people assassinated.
Yeah.
Mostly hanging. One of them, I think there was something wrong. They had to set up like a scaffolding on the lawn.
Yeah.
So it was like a public execution. Yeah.
Do you know of anyone that's like had any experiences here?
Guards.
They did start outdoors. They hanged men. I don't remember what the number was. Some sources are kind of iffy on the number of hangings that the Don Jail actually saw, but they did have several outdoors before moving everything indoors. So capital punishment wasn't abolished in Canada until 1976, and by then, Canada as a country had hanged 710 convicted men for their crimes. Don Jail's number ranges between, like, the high 20s, low 30s kind of range.
So just a piece of it.
Yeah, just a small piece.
Yeah.
So I know there were 26 men hanged in the indoor gallows, which was located, like, it's located on the second floor of the building. It's part of the self-guided tour, if you can get up to the second floor when you visit. And lucky for us, Don Jail was home to some of the best-known Canadian hangmen. Men like John Radcliffe, Arthur Ellis, and Camille Blanchard did some of their work on the jail grounds, and Samuel Edwards, who was Toronto-based, did his work during the Great Depression and carried out his first ever execution of the jail in 1931. But the other men, John, Arthur, and Camille, I'm guessing it's, Camille Blanchard, they were well-known throughout Canada and some of them throughout the world as, like, that was a very well-known popular hangman. Because they were good at their job. Thomasina Teolis. That's what I'm going to go with.
Okay.
Whoever was in charge of providing the weight of Teolis to Ellis did it wrong. And thanks to the incorrect weight, Ellis's calculations were put off significantly. So much so that Teolis didn't actually die from hanging. The miscalculations ended with an accidental beheading.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Like, at least it was quick.
Wait, how does that even happen?
The weights would have dropped him too fast.
Oh.
So it was like the weight of him dropping and like the how fast it would have dropped, just like the rope just severed his neck. There was a practice in play at the time of, through invitation, the public would be allowed to watch an indoor execution at the gallows.
Oh no.
So that practice was discontinued after this event.
So there were people watching.
So there
this.
Were there was public there. Okay. That was in Montreal. That has nothing to do with the Don Jail, but that was a story I wanted to share.
But he worked there.
Yeah, he hanged, I think I said three?
Two.
Yeah. Yeah, two men there. And they're two of the Forgotten 15, which we're going to get into very soon. Next. So, Don Jail was also the site of the very last executions before the abolishment of capital punishment in Canada. On December 11th, 1962, Ronald Turpin and Arthur Lucas were hanged. They were convicted in separate murder cases. Before that, as we said before, there were many, many other men that were led to the deaths within that building. And in a 2009 documentary called Hangman's Graveyard, an archaeological investigation into a forgotten cemetery at the jail leads to the identification of 15 separate human remains found on the grounds. And these men are now known as the Forgotten 15.
Yeah.
So this team went through and painstakingly identified all 15 remains that they found in this unmarked grave.
Mm-hmm.
It was the exercise yard of the jail. So that practice, I can't remember what... I know I read this, but I didn't write it down. But there was a certain time during the jail where the practice of burying the hanged men on the grounds was discontinued.
Okay.
But I think that was relatively late. Like, I want to say it was in the 30s.
Yeah.
But up until that point, they were just burying people on the grounds. I'm going to go through these 15 men.
Okay.
And I want to say their names. We're going to discuss some of their crimes, because some were worse than others. But I'm going to go through them for a few reasons. One, because it's kind of cool. It's really interesting to begin with, and these men were hanged and forgotten for many years until this dig unearthed them. But two, I believe it's possible that angry spirits of men like these could have stuck around in the jail and could have contributed to a lot of the stuff that we were feeling when we were there. And all 15 were hanged in that indoor gallows. So you have to think that it's possible that some of them stuck around.
Right.
So the aforementioned documentary, Hangman's Graveyard, is available for free on Vimeo. It's only 48 minutes long, so I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes. So if anybody's interested in watching it, it's fun. Okay, so very quickly, these are the 15 men. I'm just going to read off their names and ages. John Travis, 22. John Williams, not the composer, 49. George Bennett, 32. Robert Neal, he was under 20 years old. Thomas Kane, 33. Henry Williams, a.k.a. August Schmidt, 40.
Is that supposed to be some sort of, like, scary name?
It's his, like, pseudonym. Like, it's his crime name.
August Schmidt?
Yeah, August Schmidt.
August Schmidt.
He's one of the ones that we're going to get into, like, a little bit. A tiny bit. Alexander Martin, 22. John Boyd, 37. He's a fun one. Remember that name. Pavel Stefoff, 46. Pascal Ventricini, 45. John Ziocco, 31. Hassan Nebi, 36. Frank McCullough, a.k.a. Leroy Swart, 24.
What is with these dumbass names? I know a menacing name. Swart.
Leroy.
Everyone's gonna call me Leo.
Oh, God. Frederick Davis, 45, and Edward Stewart, 33. Those are the 15 men and how old they were at the time that they were hung. Some of them are rough ages. It was kind of, like, around this age, but that's where we're at.
Okay.
And we're not going to talk about all of them, but I've picked out a few that have stories that are either funny in at least one case or kind of make my skin crawl in a couple cases. They're all murderers to differing degrees of severity. So, like, we're going from shooting a storekeeper in a botched robbery to the mutilation of a child, kind of.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got lots of different kinds of pieces of shit in here. And since I'm a true crime nut, I'm going to turn this podcast into a true crime podcast very briefly. So here's my favorite assholes of the asshole lot. Or at least my favorite stories of the assholes of the asshole lot. Okay. John Williams. kicked his wife to death in a drunken rage.
Okay.
And I have to imagine that this drunken rage came out of frustration with having to deal with the, wait for it, 14 children he and his wife had together.
Wow.
Yeah. Henry Williams, this is our friend who is also known as August Schmidt. He shot a grocer during a robbery. I'm bringing him up only because I legitimately laughed out loud when I found out that his execution was postponed for one day because they accidentally scheduled his hanging to be on Good Friday.
Oh my god.
Jesus almost had you back there, buddy.
Wow.
Yeah. Pavel Stefanov. He was a Macedonian immigrant who hacked fellow Macedonian immigrant Vanni Simov to death with a hatchet in 1909.
Oh, God.
He was found, like, the police tracked him down. He still had blood on his clothes from the murder.
So he was definitely guilty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. But this wasn't a one-off for him. So after his execution, the Globe revealed that Stefanov was wanted on murder charges in New York and Indiana.
Oh, shit.
This guy was a full-on serial killer. In multiple places. Like, he went New York, Indiana, Toronto.
Yeah.
But they only condemned him on the one crime in Toronto, and that's what he was hanged for. They kept the other secret so as not to influence the court case.
Guys,
whatever the fuck
we
that means.
Know that he killed the other people in the other two cities, but we only want you to focus on this one killing. Because we don't want it to affect your opinion of him.
It doesn't make any fucking sense at all. This next person is a human pile of reeking garbage.
Okay.
This is Frederick Davis. First of all, let's get into what the man looked like. He had gold teeth, wore a wig, walked with a limp, had open sores on his face, and he suffered from syphilis, which may have also given him dementia.
Oh, wow.
He was a real catch, ladies. Oh. Frederick Davis.
Oh.
Flirt with him going down the street there. Yeah. Oh. Lovely. Lovely. Imagine seeing that walking towards you.
Yeah. No.
Philip Goldberg was an 8-year-old boy that had been seen with Frederick Davis earlier that day and was found later in a vacant lot with his throat slit from ear to ear and his skull crushed. Davis was seen leaving the lot, and police later tracked him down to a New York jail where he was serving time for a different crime. It doesn't say what that crime was, though.
Okay.
The Toronto jury only took 2 minutes to find him guilty.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. His lawyer tried to get him off on claims that the syphilis was giving him dementia, and it was because of his addled state of mind that he murdered this, but that is mutilation. That's not an... like it. Actual human trash.
That's terrible.
Yeah. He would make a good ghost.
Yeah? I wouldn't want him around as a ghost, though.
No. Are you ready for some fun, though? This is the last thing that I have.
Okay.
This is like, legitimately just hilarious kind of fun.
Okay.
Okay? So, this is where we're getting into the escapes.
All right.
And escape attempts. So Don Jail was ground zero for a few notorious and sensational escapes. One of my favorites is an escape from one of the Forgotten 15, 24-year-old Frank McCullough, which was Leroy Swart.
Oh, wow.
He escaped in 1919 after drugging the guard that was in his cell with him using a sleeping potion.
Wait, why is the guard in the cell?
Don't know.
Sleeping potion? What are these guys doing in there? I am Newt. I need some I am Newt right now. We're gonna bubbling up
in his little chamber pot.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Drink this thing I made. What is that guard doing?
Right?
Yeah.
He then sawed through the bars and then leapt over the wall to freedom, leaving a note in his cell that read, "Sorry, but it had to be done." He was captured and hung just a few months later, but you gotta admire that guy's efforts.
I mean, he was caught a few months later. That's pretty good.
Yeah, he did it. The next one is even more impressive, okay? Yeah. This is insane. Okay. There were a few breakouts that were orchestrated by bands of criminals who teamed up while in the jail together. So, Edwin Boyd, remember I said to remember his name?
Yep.
He was a, quote, brash bank robber, and sparked a massive manhunt that led to a commissioned review in 1952 into how they actually managed to escape.
Okay.
So the first time
oh,
that so Boyd
more
escaped,
than one attempt.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first time that he escaped, he used a hacksaw.
Wait, how did he get a hacksaw?
You're going to love this. You're going to love this. It was concealed in the wooden prosthetic foot of his inmate, Tough Lenny.
That's tough.
Tough Lenny. Tough Lenny with the wooden foot.
Oh,
because
God.
I think it was because he had an accident with a train and lost
okay.
his foot. I guess his foot was
but
run
a
over.
Hacksaw
was concealed
in it.
His foot. Yeah.
Okay.
But
how did he get it in his foot?
Well, he would have put it in before he was arrested. It was probably because he was like, you know, he was like a crime
yeah.
person, so he just like keeps
yeah.
this hacksaw in his
foot.
Okay. So Boyd, Tough Lenny, and another prisoner known as the Clown. Sawed through the bars and escaped. They committed more robberies together, and according to the Star, they orchestrated the, quote, biggest bank holdup in the history of Toronto. They got $30,000, which, when adjusted to from, like, the inflation from 1951 to now, is equal to just about $300,000 in
okay.
today's money, in this one holdup. Eventually, one by one, all of the men were caught again and put back into jail. And then in 1952, they were inexplicably put back together in their cells. And they escaped again. So these three men, they
escaped. I was thinking about, like, the one guard doing the seating plan. Like, all the thing. It's like, they work well together. Let's put them in together.
Like a teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, this actually prompted the mayor, the then mayor, to say that it seemed like the jail was run by, quote, a bunch of morons.
Yeah.
which, honestly, yeah. So they caught the gang for the third time in Don Valley just a few months later with no incident. So they didn't commit any more crimes. They were just caught a few months later. But this time they wasted no time in trying and condemning two of the men to death by hanging. Boyd himself was given 8 life sentences and then released in 1966.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't look into what happened to him after, but there was nothing, so I'm assuming he just
mm-hmm.
didn't do anything. He was
yeah.
probably quite old by then anyway.
Yeah.
And the very last one, 1946, a gang called the Polka Dot Gang.
Oh, God.
Okay. Canadian
just...
gangs. Like, they got...
Why?
We gotta get some better crime
Why?
Names up in here. We gotta get some better names up in here. Like, these Canadians are no good at naming themselves.
No.
Tough Lenny, the Clown, the Polka Dot Gang.
Okay.
Anyway, they were named that after the red and white handkerchiefs that they wore during the robberies that they did.
Okay.
And they made an escape attempt in 1946. They were all caught and thrown back into their cells before escaping. But their noble and courageous effort involved an attempt to build a human pyramid in the exercise yard in order to climb over the wall. Like,
so that's a lot of them, then.
Not obvious at all. Yeah, it didn't say how many there were,
yeah.
but yeah.
But still.
Yeah.
How about teamwork, man?
Yeah. So that's all I have.
Okay.
Wasn't that fun?
Yes.
I wanted to get into so much more. Like, oh God, there's so much.
So there is someone I know. I had found out recently today that he actually was a corrections officer at the Don Jail. Quite a long time ago, but he did have a couple stories for us of the things that went on there, so we're just gonna play them now and see what you think.
They used to count the spoons going in and out, because what people would do is they would keep a spoon and not return it, pull the head off the spoon, sharpen the shaft, and make a shiv out of it, you know, a homemade knife. So we had to count the spoons going in and coming out.
Yeah.
If there was a missing spoon, You'd have to go in and search every bunk, every person. It was a lot of work. One day, I got the spoons back and there was missing one. And I was by myself. I didn't want to go in. Didn't want to go through that. There was one guy who was on his own in a separate cell. He was in for a double murder of Joan Lipson and somebody else. This guy's like a hitman.
Yeah.
He was quite pleasant. And I forget his name.
Yeah.
But I went up to him and I said, look, I'm tired. Do me a favor. And they called you boss. He goes, what do you want, boss?
Yeah.
I said, I need to know if you have any spare spoons. And I'm not going to confiscate them. Because I want to get a spoon because the count came back one short. He goes, you promise you're not going to tell anybody? I said, I promise. He lifted up a corner of the carpet. He had like four or five spoons.
Oh, my God.
And he said, how many do you want? I said, just the ones good.
Wait, why did he have them? Just because?
Maybe future weapons.
Yeah.
Just because he could.
And you just didn't want
to... I didn't give a shit. I'll tell you another story. Solitary confinement. We called it the hole.
Right. Yeah, we went on one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was back in the day, in the, I guess I was there in the late 70s, mm-hmm. working as a guard.
Yeah.
And when you were in the hole, it was horrible. You wore an asbestos suit, like an asbestos nightgown. You had to go to the bathroom in a hole in the floor. And believe it or not, you won't believe this, you ate meatloaf sandwiches three times a day. Now, the worst part for a lot of these guys was there was no smoking in the hole. These guys were, you know, a lot of them were big smokers.
Yeah.
Actual cigarettes in jail in the old days were called TMs, tailor-mades, because people were issued back then tobacco and rolling papers.
Yeah.
TMs were like a luxury. You had to buy them.
Davisville Station.
I'm doing my patrol one day to make sure nobody's dead.
Yeah.
This guy said, hey, boss. I said, yeah. He said, give me a TM. I said, I'm not supposed to do that. Remember, I was a university student.
Yeah.
I was a bit of a coward. I wasn't big, you know.
Yeah.
I really, really, really want a TM. I said, I don't think I should give you one. Just give me a TM. Give me one. Anyway, I gave him one or two.
Yeah.
But a week later, I'm lined up because sometimes they'd let the guards have dinner in the kitchen and the inmates would serve dinner.
Yeah.
And back then I used to eat pork chops. I don't eat them anymore.
Yeah.
I was in a lineup. Hold up my plate. I was given like three pork chops. And I look up. It's the guy I gave the cigarettes to. He gave me like a wink. Because he was grateful that I gave him the cigarettes.
So while I was editing our audio from the Dawn Jail, I came across a really weird sound. I didn't realize what it was in the beginning, but it's in between when I'm talking. So I'll play it now. You can peep through. I'm gonna peep through the crack. It's just like some shelves.
No, it's locked.
Okay, that's what I see. I was a little brave. I was like, I'm gonna go in. But it's like, you can look through the cracks and look. It's just like a bunch of stuff. So I actually ended up asking my mom about this, and she didn't understand what I meant. She thought I was talking about when I said I was kind of brave, but I was actually talking about the part before that. I was a little brave. And it's like this whisper sound, and I don't know if you guys can hear it. It's... I'm not sure what it's saying, but I know it's not me and it's not Adara, because I am saying, I am peeking into this hole, this crevice in between the door, and I'm describing what I see. And I say, oh, I see like a mail room or whatever I say. And then I back away and say, I was a little brave. But in between those two times of when I'm talking, there's this whisper sound, and it's freaked me out. It freaked my mom out. It freaked anyone else that I showed it to. So I wanted to show you guys today. See what you think. I can't explain it, just like I can't explain the next experience that's going to come up. But hope you enjoy it. So according to an article written on Ghost Walks, there has been a lot of supernatural activity in the jail, which is probably pretty obvious given its history, yep. The killing. The jail was operational until when? When did they shut it down? Do you know when?
1977.
For that one, but then there was...
And then the jail itself completely closed in 2013.
Okay.
When everything was transferred to whatever the jail is now. I can't remember what it's called.
Okay, so this is... back when they still had inmates and stuff. So back in 2005, okay. When they had people just held there for a short amount of time, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So back in 2005, when the prison was still functioning, they had a punching bag in the general kind of area where people could gather and mm-hmm. whatever, have conversations, whatever. So they had a punching bag to help relieve frustration, whatever, stuff like that. One night, an inmate was heard in his cell yelling out.
Oh.
And a guard came to investigate, and the inmate claimed that he heard a slap and the chains rattling, and he gestured towards the punching bag. He's like, I heard this. So the guard went and checked it out, looked around, didn't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the guard told him to go back to sleep, and...
go back to sleep. There's no monster in the closet. It's fine.
Soon after, other inmates were heard shouting... and they're complaining that someone was hitting the punching bag. They're like, someone is hitting the punching bag. We're hearing these sounds. There's someone here who's out. The frustrated guards turned all the lights on, did a full search, checked the cells to make sure everyone was in the cell. Everything was normal. Everyone was accounted for. Later on, two guards were doing a routine walk and they heard a slap and chains rattling. So they actually heard it themselves. Ran to the punching bag, and they found it slowly swinging back and forth. So that's one of the bigger accounts that they had. Another one is a known ghost to people that come and visit the place, and also guards.
Can I just, real quick?
Yeah.
In the punching bag thing, can you imagine if it was literally just all of the inmates fucking with the guards? It's like, hey guys, tonight, we're all gonna say that we can hear something hitting the punching bag, okay? Yeah. Everybody get in on it. Come on, guys, it'll be fun.
Yeah. The thing is that they also analyzed it. They said that, first of all, the punching bag was not close enough to the cells for them to, like, take a broom handle and push the bag.
Right,
and also, they wouldn't have enough movement to how much the bag was swinging.
Right, yeah.
Right? So, it was kind of impossible for any of them to be doing anything.
Yeah.
Also, in the 1890s, there was a female inmate. She made a noose from her bed sheets in her small west wing cell of the prison, and she hung herself. And she's known to many guards as they walk on the second level and enter the west wing. They claim to see a woman angrily pacing back and forth, her white gown swaying back and forth. And a Toronto Star journalist named Tracy Tyler said that the ghost is violent due to being trapped in time, kind of thing.
Right.
So she basically feels that she's still in the time that she is,
mm-hmm.
And not aware of her surroundings. So there's that. So there's not a lot of reported ghost mm-hmm. stuff. I did find on another website, I think it was the same, it was still Ghost Walks. Yeah. No, on torontoghost.org. There are some listeners would write to them and say that they had visited the Don Jail, and mm-hmm. they said... in the east wing of the jail in the basement, they experienced a heaviness and overwhelming sadness in a block of cells. Which is something that I experienced when we were there.
Yeah.
Like, I was walking down the hall and I was totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I was walking down the hall and, like, as I got, like, closer to the midway point, I felt, like, tears, like, welling up in my eyes.
Yeah.
Like, sad. Like, fully sad. And I was, like, told Derek, I'm like, I feel like crying right now. But I wasn't, like, I knew I would, like, I didn't know why it was happening, but it was happening.
And you actually turned away from me, too. You're like, I feel like I'm about to cry, and you turned away, and I saw you, like, reach up.
Yeah.
I didn't feel anything.
I don't like the noises that are coming off of us.
Okay, for example, I'm crying.
I don't know why.
I don't know what happened. It was just so sudden that, and it was just in this one space. And so when I had looked at torontoghost.org, There was two other people saying they experienced the exact same thing in the exact same place, and one of them claimed they had saw a flash, like, in their head of a man with dark hair bent over in a cell crying, kind of thing.
I mean, there was probably a lot of crying going on.
Oh, yeah, in that and, type yeah. of area. So, those are the ghost stories I have. It's super short, mm-hmm. but now...
We need to get into...
The public stories are done. We need to get into when we were there.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that it's, like, a huge experience, okay? It's not, like, crazy, but we...
Yeah, and the thing is, we didn't realize what had happened until we listened to the audio back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, like, I'm the kind of person, like, I've had experiences before, but I'm still in the, I'm going to logic my way through this, there's definitely an explanation, there's no way, all blah, 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 blah.
But when you have recorded...
Yeah, that was, it was so weird, like...
Stuff?
Yesterday when we listened, because we, this is, okay, this is what happened. This is what happened. Okay. Yesterday, when we got back from the Don Jail, we were hanging out in my apartment, kind of doing some work, and Kenzie turned on her recording just to kind of, like, play while we were doing work, just so we can listen to it. So while we were there, Kenzie was recording on her phone, and I had a portable microphone that I was recording on. So she turned on her portion of the audio, and we were just listening to it, and there was a part when we were in the portion of the jail that actually had the cells that were open and the bed.
So we had the chance to go in, sit on the bed. I laid down the bed because I was, for some reason, I wanted to.
Yeah. And while you were in the cell, because I had gone in first and we, like, took pictures, and while you were in the cell, I was standing outside of the cell.
Yeah.
So you had your phone with you and I had my microphone with me. And I said, hey, Kenzie, are you going to be okay if I run to the washroom real quick? Yeah. Because I knew that Kenzie, like, she might not want to be left alone. I was pretty sure I was going to be okay if I was left alone. I was just like, I'm just going to make sure everything's fine. Kenzie said yes.
Yeah, I felt totally fine. Yeah, like, with Adara, I was, like, felt brave. I didn't feel weird or anything. I was like, you know, this is totally fine. She can go.
Yeah.
Immediately as she left, I did not feel good anymore. And I was laying there, and so she went to the bathroom, okay? I was laying there on the bed, and I was hearing kind of, like, shuffling, kind of, like, it was, like, mixed with voices, so it could have been mixed with voices that were coming from upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you guys, there was not very many people in this jail.
No.
There was one security guard, no, two of them.
Two of them, yeah.
And then, like, a couple, probably admin people walking around the second floor.
And some custodians.
Yeah, and some custodians.
On the second and third
floor. But there wasn't anyone with us besides one person, which we'll tell you in a second.
Yeah.
So I was laying down, and I heard, like, shuffling and noise and, like, kind of some voices a little bit, and I was like, Adara? So you'll hear this. So I was calling her out to Adara because I was thinking, it sounds like someone has entered back into that cell block, and someone had come in to see me. So I was like, Adara? And then, like, I started hearing shuffling noises again, so then I say her name again. No response. I'm not getting any response. So I'm like, okay, so obviously she's not here. And at the time, I just kind of pushed it off and been like, okay, it's just like a mixture of, like,
you start talking about the bed.
I started describing the bed for you guys. Yeah. Like, I was, like, totally, because I wasn't aware of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
I get up, whatever. I get up, I'm coming out of the cell, and then I hear Adara's voice as she's coming back because she turned on her own recording.
Yeah, so here's my, like, simultaneous kind of story. So as soon as I left, Kenzie said it was okay, and I was still holding my microphone. And just before, after Kenzie was like, yeah, I'll be okay, I kind of turned around, and I was about to leave, and then I realized I was still holding the microphone, and I was like, oh, you guys don't need to hear me pee.
Yeah.
So I set the microphone down on a little ledge that was just outside of the cell. It was, like, across the hall from where Kenzie was.
Yeah.
I set it down and I walked out. Now, the bathroom, I had to cross to the other side of the building, which isn't that far, but I still had to, like, leave that section and go to the, like, exact opposite
side. It's a bunch of hallways,
side.
Guys. Like, it's not, like, one big open space, so it's a little twist and turn kind of thing.
Yeah, so I'm walking through and I get to, we were talking about the architectural design and how there was the gallery that's kind of, like, this hexagonal, like, half hexagonal thing, And I'm walking through there, and I get about halfway by, and I hear this noise, and it sounded similar to a noise that Kenzie and I had heard coming from behind a door earlier that was just, like, a release. Like, there's a bunch of fans going on because mm-hmm. it's, like, an administrative building. I don't know we don't know exactly what it was, but it was just some sort of, like, air release thing.
Yeah.
And I hear that noise again, and it scares the shit out of me, because as soon as I left Kenzie, because I was also feeling okay when I was with you, but as soon as I turned the corner and I was no longer, like, in sight of you, I was like, oh, I kind of feel weird.
And Adair is much braver than me, guys. So when she's feeling on edge, it's like, you know, there's something.
Yeah, it was bizarre. So I'm going through and I'm kind of feeling and I'm kind of thinking, oh, maybe I should have brought the mic with me. And then I hear this and then I hear something fall and I turn around and there were these cardboard pieces against like that were up on the wall. They were like wrapped around the corners of the doorways and there was like six or so doorways in that little area. And two of the cardboard pieces had fallen down. And that's like what I had heard, but it scared the ever-loving shit out of me. And there was no reason for them to have actually fallen.
No.
So I take up my phone and I turn on my voice recording. And I'm just like whispering to it because I'm not the kind of person that's going to turn on a recording to narrate what's going on. But I felt like I needed that kind of connection.
Yeah.
To like, I don't know, not necessarily document it, but it kind of felt like I'm... was not alone anymore when I had the recording on. So I keep walking and I'm whispering, getting into the bathroom. And when I get into the bathroom, I can hear noises in the other stall. So I turn off the recording because I'm like, I'm not going to sit on the toilet and talk to myself with another person in here.
Yeah.
Now, this person, I never saw her. I'm not convinced that she was there. it was definitely another person.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, guys. We were able to, like, line up the audio from all three recordings and determine that it could not have been me or the other woman that was in the bathroom that made the noises that Kenzie heard and didn't realize that she had heard.
Yeah.
So,
because we had three different recordings now. So we had mine, we had the one that she had set on that heater or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, which wasn't functioning, by the way.
No, it was.
And then we had her phone audio, so... There was this other girl in the bathroom that left after you got in there.
Yes, so she, like, did my business, whatever. She left her stall, washed her hands, and exited the bathroom just as I exited my stall.
Yeah.
So as soon as, like, she was gone and I was out, I'm like, okay. So I turned on my audio, and I have audio of me washing my hands.
Yeah.
And then my audio follows my walk back towards where Kenzie was, where I stop and I pick up a piece of cardboard and I talk to it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are you doing on the floor?
Yeah.
And then I go back and I'm like, and I'm back.
Yeah.
And I stop my phone recording. And that's where my phone ends.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now, be aware, guys, that it's a cell block, okay? So there's a doorway that she had to enter into. So it's like a hallway that ends
mm-hmm.
and there's like six or so cells.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the first one that actually had the bed in there. So when we were back at Adara's place, we were listening to my recording and like she heard me saying like Adara and stuff like that. And I explained to her that I had heard some noises,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And I actually didn't know this, but Adara had her recording on
in
that hallway. So we're thinking, maybe Adara's audio picked up more of what I was hearing, because I wasn't really hearing anything. Until when I listened to it back, I heard it.
Yeah.
But then we listened to Adara's audio.
Okay. First, before we even did that, though, I went to the washroom. Okay, a lot of the story is me going to the fucking washroom. But I went to the washroom here in my apartment, and I pull out my phone, and I listen back to, it's about a minute and a half, or wait, no, 4 minutes of audio.
Yeah.
On my phone from when I went to the washroom. Like, I was gone for maybe, I think it's like 5 or 6 minutes of the space of me being gone. So I'm listening back because my immediate thought when we heard Kenzie's recording was, well, maybe the noises that she heard was me picking up the piece of cardboard or the piece of cardboard falling. But based on the timing of my recording when I come in compared to the timing of Kenzie's recording when I come in, there is a full minute between Kenzie calling my name the second time and when I actually arrive back in the cell block. I pick up the piece of cardboard 15 seconds before I go back into the cell block.
But it's also the fact that the cardboard was not in the cell block.
It wasn't in the cell block. No, it was in a completely separate room. It was like around two different corners.
Once you guys hear the recording, you can tell that it's not somewhere that's outside of the cell block. It's in the cell block.
Yeah.
because you can even hear me. My voice sounds distant away, and I was maybe, like, what, 3 meters away from it?
Not
like,
even, yeah.
Because like, I was laying in the bed in that small, tiny cell, and then there's the hallway outside.
Yeah.
So we listened to back, and we listened to Adara's audio.
Yeah. Okay.
And we listened to maybe 500 times, but it was so clear. It was so, so clear, you guys. So I'm going to play it for you.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you play, maybe play your audio and then play my audio, and you can see kind of the difference between your voice in comparison to the sound.
Yeah.
So
you can see, so basically, you can hear it a lot more on Adara's audio because hers was closer to the floor and actually in the hallway, so it actually sounds like the sound comes right near the microphone. So you guys are going to hear the audio, so you hear the audio now.
Would you be okay with me leaving you here for a minute?
Yeah. Okay. So now I'm alone, you guys. And it's much worse without her here. I'm just gonna take an Instagram story. Oh god, okay. I feel much, much worse. Sorry, I heard something. Okay. Okay, it's okay. Just relax. It's okay. Guys, I hear noises coming from outside. So basically, we analyzed it like 500 times, and
we spent like an hour on it.
Yeah, we hear three steps like that.
Yeah,
and then this drag.
Yeah,
like a drag, which is the worst thing for me. Like the steps, whatever. But then there's that long drag, and then you hear me say Adara again, and then two more steps.
Yeah. And then that's it. And then a full minute later is when I come back into the cell block.
Okay.
And, yeah. And in my recording, the phone recording,
yeah,
I'm washing my hands at the time that this is happening on the other side of the building.
Yeah. And so it couldn't have happened.
Yeah. It couldn't have happened. It couldn't have been me, and it couldn't have been the woman that left before me either.
No. So now let's go into why we can't explain this, okay? First of all, there is no sound leading up to that point.
No, like you can't hear anybody.
So you would hear someone's footsteps entering the room.
Yeah.
But there isn't that. It's just right by the mic, that sound, and then I say Adara again, and then it stops immediately.
Nothing.
Then we have the theory of the dragging sound. We're like, okay, was maybe someone trying to steal our stuff?
Yeah, I thought maybe someone was trying to steal my bag, because my bag was right on the floor, kind of adjacent to where I had set down the microphone.
Yeah.
But I carry around a pharmacy in my bag, you guys. I'm like stocked up on
drugs. It's loud. If you drag the bag, you can hear all of the items.
Yeah, and you can hear like my Advil and my Midol and my Gravel and all that. It like rattles in the bag. Like we tried dragging my bag.
We dragged it on the floor and stuff. And then I also thought, if someone's trying to steal your stuff, they wouldn't drag it for like 3 seconds.
Especially if there's someone like sitting right there that's calling someone's name.
No. And if you hear me, the thing is that I was also like, okay, well, it wasn't Adara either because she didn't come in yet.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she would have responded to me.
Yeah, I'm not going to be that asshole.
Even though it sounds far away, guys, like, you can hear it. If I was calling out to her and she was, like, maybe even, like, just outside the cell block, she would be able to hear me.
Yeah.
So we kind of root out all these things. Then we're like, okay, well, we actually can't explain this at all.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
I have no clue how to logic my way through this. And maybe it was nothing, but it's so
it's so prominent.
Yeah.
And it's so loud, and you can actually, like, you can hear it. And it's, and it freaked me out, because then I listened to hers, and then I listened to mine back, and I actually could hear that stuff in my recording.
Yeah.
Not as loud. So it's obvious that it wasn't where I was. It was in the hallway where that microphone was. I know it was nobody, because we don't have any sound of anyone coming up to the mic.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was somebody, why would they be dragging their shit in front of our mic?
Yeah. And directly in front of the mic.
It is.
Like, there's, yeah, it is bizarre. One of our theories was that maybe it was a noise that Kenzie had made. In the cell, but the thing is, it's louder on my microphone, which was farther away from her than obviously her phone would have been, and every single time you moved,
you can hear the bed.
You can hear the bed. That bed was loud as shit.
Yeah.
You can hear it loud and clear on my recording, which was several feet away.
Yeah. So you can hear me, but it's distant. It's not it's not a sound I made, because I'm not right near the microphone. I'm in a cell block. Yeah. I'm in the cell. Yeah.
Okay. It's so weird.
It's creepy.
I really want to logic my way through it. Yeah. Like, I that's all I want to do is be like, okay, I need a solid answer. This is what it was.
So, yeah, we just wanted to share that with you guys, because that just really freaked us out.
Yeah, we don't know how to explain it.
No. So that was that. We had, in the hallways, and I'll just mention, overall, the air was just, it felt so heavy and thick, and I found it really hard to breathe in there.
Mm-hmm.
And Adara felt fine in the beginning, but I was not feeling fine. I felt, like, dizzy, and then there was, like, a crying thing.
I get the impression that you're more sensitive to that kind of stuff than I am.
Yeah.
I put up walls in real life just in general.
Yeah.
I have emotional walls up, like, it's my job.
Yeah.
And maintaining them, so I think that probably keeps me separate from it a little bit. I'm a little bit more desensitized to it.
Yeah. This was, like... And the thing is that Adair and I both had experiences and stuff like that, and this happened, I've had experiences, like, when I was younger and all this kind of stuff, and I put up those walls, and I feel like now that we're doing this podcast, and I'm going, I was like, okay, well, I have to let these walls back down, just so I can describe to you guys what we're feeling,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of people can pick this up, like, you don't have to be special, like, a psychic person, you can just tell just by standing there. They're like, well, I don't like this area.
Yeah.
It does not feel good to me.
Yeah.
So let us know what you think. Yesterday we analyzed this for hours. And, you know, we are firm believers in ghosts and stuff like that, but we still want to know how things occurred in that kind of way.
I'm a very logical person.
Yeah.
I need a hard answer.
We didn't get a hard answer.
No.
So that's not very satisfying.
I hate it.
But anyway. That is all we have for you today.
That was a lot. I mean, if you need more than that, I don't know what to tell you.
This will be a longer episode, but I was...
Worth it.
Yeah, we love sharing this one with you guys, because I found it totally interesting, the true crime part.
Oh, so
let us know if you like that kind of stuff.
Yes, if you like that kind of stuff, then
we'll do more of it. We'll still mix the ghost stuff in, because
that's our main focus.
That's
our thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you want more true crimey stuff, because, like, I mean, there's a lot of ghost stories that overlap with true crime, kind of almost necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
It's these awful, awful things that happen that create some of the worst spirits. I mean, even last week's, but the last main episode that we did with our Cookie Baron, that overlapped with true crime as well.
Yeah.
We didn't have as much information, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we hope you enjoyed this time. Next week we'll have another guest.
Yes.
Talking about her home.
Yes.
So, we look forward to that, and we look forward to you hearing our next episode.
Dead Men Don't Podcast is hosted by us, Adara and Kenzie. Original music has been provided by Ethan Reed. Find us on social media at Dead Men Don't Pod on Twitter, at Dead Men Don't Podcast on Instagram, Dead Men Don't Podcast on Facebook, and email us at deadmendontpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow our composer, Ethan, on Instagram at Ethan A. Reed. Find all of these links and more in the description. Thanks for listening.